The Chaos Kid Phenomena: How to Survive Your Spouse's Midlife Crisis. Hi, my name is Larry Bellotta, and I want to welcome you to this teleseminar event. And I'm imagining that you've chosen to listen to this because the title of my talk relates to what you could be experiencing right now in your own marriage. If you're facing anything like the marriage situations that I've been hearing about in my over 1,600 interviews I've done with men and women in troubled marriages over 6 years, I can just tell you, I really feel what you're going through. If you're one of the men or one of the women who is facing this level of pain, rejection, confusion, my purpose in this overview is to help you give yourself some big picture perspective about why you're listening. The reason I say that is because waking up to a situation where your husband or wife is not the man or woman you're married, then every part of your life is being stretched severely because of this. The extreme personality change you're witnessing might have come over him or her slowly over a year or two, or like some, it could have surprised you completely out of the blue. But one thing you know when you look into your spouse's eyes at those painful moments, you know it's not him, you know it's not her. Well, then who is it? That's what I want to begin to answer, because one of the most important things you must conclude is that you have no idea this was coming. In fact, even if you did know, there would be very little you could do about it or could have done about it. To drive this further, I often ask men and women in these interviews this question: what if I would have shown up at your house and explained this entire Chaos Kid phenomena to you and proved to you that one of these years your spouse was going to collapse into this person you just didn't know? Because it was not happening at the time, and because it didn't happen before, you wouldn't have believed me. In fact, you probably would have been throwing me out of your house. It's only now, as I make the case today, that you're actually ready to hear me. And I hope you do hear me, because the first thing I want you to see and to do is feel a sense of relief. You know, with each interview I conducted, I started by asking people, both men and women, to tell me about their childhood home, the first 10 years of their childhood. And then I ask, you know, what they know about those first 10 years of the person that they married. Some people know a lot, but others know virtually nothing about the first 10 years of the life of the person they married. I'm going to demonstrate later why knowing the childhood of the person you marry is virtually the key to your marriage happiness or misery. You know, if you Google my name, you will see that I talk extensively about what I call Chaos Kids. Chaos Kids is the term I coined to create a word picture about the childhood experience of being born into a home you did not choose, and you experienced the loss of what I call the kid standard. This is a term that sums up the most critical needs that every child is looking for in their first 10 years. It's the kid standard that will decide the rest of your marriage. The kid standard is completely in the control of the people who raise you. The two elements of the kid standard are: one, mom and dad enjoy each other. Two, mom and dad make me feel important and valuable. This is what every child needs most. That's because it's the standard that will create security and stability in their childhood brains. Ultimately, in adult life, the kid standard is what determines the quality of your marriage. The first part of the kid standard is that mom and dad enjoy each other. You know, as a child's brain is forming in those first 10 years, the more it absorbs happy conversation of mom and dad, observes physical affection, responsibility, positive communication between mom and dad, the brain forms what the convincing message is that relationships are safe. The second part of the kid standard ensures that the brain will form with the instructions that you can succeed at anything, because you're valuable and important in this world. Your parents are the ones that put those programs in there. You probably heard about programming from childhood, but that word programming is not particularly useful. A much better word is instruction, as in brain instructions. That's because your mother or father are actually creating a set of instructions from birth to age 10 that will create a kind of machine loaded with instructions, which will ultimately govern your life. And as I talk about, very few people like this idea, especially when those instructions can be so very destructive. It's easy to see why the kid standard must be positive, because These are the instructions that will create your behavior when you marry as an adult. The kid standard is built on two relationships that your parents are completely in control of. The first relationship is between mom and dad. The second relationship is between mom and dad and you. For over 54,750 hours of your first 10 years of waking time, messages will be piling in from both of them. And these messages can be measured on a scale from very positive to very negative. The more negative those thousands of messages, the more pain you will experience throughout your life. To help you get a better grip on these brain phenomena, let me give you some detail about what science discovered about the formation of your brain in those first 10 years. The brain is the only organ that starts large at birth and shrinks with age. 42 days after conception, the brain begins a 120-day growth explosion by creating 9,500 new brain cells a second until you have 100 billion of them. 60 days before you're born, each of your brain cells begins reaching out to other brain cells with a tiny communication device scientists call a synapse. And when a brain cell succeeds in creating a connection to another brain cell, this is called a synaptic connection. And when your first 3 years on Earth, each one of your 100 billion brain cells have created 15,000 synaptic connections each. That's 15,000 connections for each of your 100 billion brain cells. But it doesn't stay that way. That's because synaptic connections that are stimulated by the behavior of the adults who raise you, these thrive, they're strengthened. But connections that are not stimulated by your parents, they wither away. By the time you're 16, half your synaptic connections of those first years are gone, but the connections that remain, they'll produce your daily behavior. Here's how it works. Electrical charges flow over your remaining synaptic connections and recreate the same behavior as the behavior of the adults who stimulated them into existence in the beginning. Your parents. Here's a simple example. Should you offer refreshment to people who visit your house, or should you just ignore the entire refreshment idea? Well, let's see. Are there any synaptic connections on hospitality in your brain? No? Okay then. Strangers go thirsty in your house. But if those strangers had their hospitality synaptic connections strengthened by their parents during their childhood, your guest will suddenly become offended. They'll storm out of your house saying something like, "He didn't even ask us if we wanted anything to drink. How rude!" That's how it works. Since that's the case, can you imagine the marriage of two people who have completely different sets of brain instructions in their synaptic connections from two completely different sets of values? You know, it's good news when both people were raised by two sets of parents who did not scar their kids' synaptic connections with abuse or neglect or overindulgence or a multitude of problems from their own childhoods. You know, this couple is going to succeed in having a very productive relationship with each other. But let's imagine that the two of you didn't get those positive kinds of brain instructions from your two sets of parents. And what if the kid standard didn't happen to either of you? In fact, what if your mothers and fathers did not only not enjoy each other, let's imagine they even resented each other. And let's say that both sets of your parents did not make either of you feel important or valuable. Now you're both adults. And those instructions formed in your childhood years have formed a kind of machine in each of your brains. And now that I've laid this out, let's look at the machine and why it decides the quality of your lives together and even how long your marriage will last. Well, the first thing you must remember and understand is if your spouse has entered the midlife crisis, you have to realize that the midlife crisis was actually created in childhood. None of us like to think of it this way because, you know, we don't like to blame parents. But what I'm bringing up has nothing to do with blame. If you wanted to start blaming somebody, you'd have to go back 3, 4, 5 generations blaming each one. Totally unproductive idea. So this is not about blaming anyone. This is about understanding why the person you married doesn't like the person he or she married anymore. How could this have happened? In my research, the person who leaves the marriage first is the person with the most pain in their brain from childhood. With few exceptions, it's virtually always that way. And now that I brought up the idea of a childhood-created machine in your brain, which determines the quality of your marriage, let's look more closely at how these childhood brain machines actually work in daily life. When you're in your 20s, that brain machine, full of parent-created instructions, is not particularly strong. And that's because in your 20s, you're truly yourself. You have all of your youth ahead of you, and you believe you're going to live forever. By the time you cross the 30-year-old mark, you begin to sense that life isn't going to be the way it was. For the majority, that's when the machine in your brain will come for you if it contains a lot of pain from a kid standard that was never met in your first 10 years. You've probably married by your 30s and once again believe that life after the wedding was going to stay that way. But an astounding thing happens after the honeymoon. When you are stressed out, tired, overwhelmed, overstimulated, sick, or any weakened condition, that childhood-created machine in your brain turns on, and you literally become your mom or your dad at their worst. You say things just like he or she said them. You have the same tone, the same look. You're clearly not yourself. The person you married can suddenly react with a phrase like, "You're just like your mother," or "You're just like your father." You know, when people talk about these high-stress marriage moments, they say, "I know what I'm doing is wrong. I really wish I could stop, but I don't have the first idea how." It's such a scary thought to be this out of control that adults don't want to think about what happened to them. When it's over, these people say they kind of wake up and become themselves again before they realize that a lot of damage was done. But once again, depending on how mom and dad handled it, you'll end up doing the same thing. If dad would never apologize, you never apologize. If mom acted like everything was just fine and nothing happened, you'll act like nothing happened and everything's just fine. You realize how true this is, but you also see that virtually everyone is doing the same thing in their marriages. Everyone has a childhood brain machine and everyone has it running their marriage. It's so widespread, it looks normal. And remember, it's all in degrees of very negative to very positive brain instructions from the first 10 years. And when it's bad, this very thing is what leads you in one of the marriage phenomena called the midlife crisis. But what is a midlife crisis? The academics and psychologists are still arguing about it. Their general agreement about the cause amounts to reasons such as going through difficult times as they mature, worrying that life is half over, menopause, death of a parent, job loss, children leaving home, career being unfulfilled. Other studies have shown that midlife crisis have very little to do with age and is more strongly connected to history of psychology, the crisis with personality type that sets people up for this kind of traumatic event, and so on. Though the experts in their studies may wander around in terms of what to do about it, other authorities have pointed to studies that show your first 10 years does create your life, especially the quality of your intimate relationship. It's academically called a non-offensive term. They call it family of origin. That certainly does not help us understand the problem that awaits us when we married one of these emotionally scarred chaos kids. The academic studies do indicate that Japanese and Indian cultures show little evidence of midlife crisis, which points to Western cultures being infected by it far more. In agreement with these studies, my own research about people's childhood experiences tells me that Western culture is connected to the midlife crisis phenomena. I believe it's because the Western value system builds into our culture a happiness at any cost belief. And when you look at it simply, an obsession with my own happiness is bound to let me down. But Western culture keeps it all alive with advertising, media, movie stars, constant promotion, wonderful dreams, fulfilled without a downside. And more than 75% of people who contact me discovered that their spouse is in an affair while they're still married. And that's just one of the typical elements of the midlife crisis. Pursuing an affair while you're still married is the pursuit of a fake fantasy where there are no troubles, no bills to pay, no sick kids to raise, no boring routine, and it's a sign of happiness at any cost. And when it combines with other dysfunctional features, creates a nightmare for the spouse who wants some version of normal. You know, I want to demonstrate that what happens in your first 10 years and the first 10 years of your spouse really does matter. An article appeared in the Wall Street Journal with a thought-provoking title. The title was, "This is Your Brain Without Dad." The article reported on the work of two German biologists who were studying the brains of an animal species where female and male raise babies together. The species is called the Degu rodent, a cousin of the guinea pig. They studied the Degu pups raised with mother and father. Their brain studies of these infants showed long-term changes in nerve cell growth that affected pup behavior as they grew. In their study, presented at the Society for Neuroscience, they reported how two parents raising babies included far more frequent interaction with the pups, more touching and playfulness by mom and dad. Degu pups raised by mothers only were also studied. In their analysis of neuron cells that send and receive messages to body and to brain, called dendrites, the biologists showed that fatherless animals had fewer dendrites compared to animals raised by both parents. Along with other brain formation developments related to dendrite formation, fatherless animals lacked far more impulse control and had more hyperactivity compared to animals raised by both parents. It's as if father and mother together create a calm set of brain instruction. Since 43% of children in the U.S. live only with one biological parent, which is the lowest percentage of the world's richest nations, by the way, studies like this make a strong case not just for childhood, but for all of adult life. My research with couples demonstrates that the creation of highly damaging brain instructions will one day control these spouses in their intimate relationship. Let me give you some quotes from my troubled couples interview system so that you can hear how these people describe these chaos kid homes that they or their mates were raised in. Now, what I'm about to read might sound like I'm quoting one person talking about one family. I'm not. Each of these quotes is from a different person, and I have thousands of statements like this. Quote, we moved a lot. I was in 12 different schools. Quote, dad was emotionally disconnected and drank heavily. Quote, mom was strong-willed, very critical of both her husband and my wife in her childhood. Quote, dad was gone a lot, but when he was there, he was not really there. Quote, dad was extremely cruel to mom and cheated on her. Quote, mom would take the presents sent from dad's parents and burn them. I could go on for hours, but you get the idea. Millions of children are not receiving the kid standard. They are getting the opposite. A later article titled How Dad's Yelling Can Spawn an Office Tyrant made a point that a manager moving up the corporate ranks hits a ceiling when upper management finally sees his blunt methods of managing people. The article zeroes in on the fact that this manager's father was tough and blunt when he was a child. His dad ignored people's feelings and showed great insensitivity to his kids in those first 10 years. In the article, there is something worth quoting. Quote, we have all worked with at least one office pain in the neck, a person who irritated coworkers and wrecked teamwork. These problems persist beyond reason because they are so deep-rooted, having been learned in the families of people's childhoods. Some managers are now using techniques to identify the childhood beginnings of harmful behavior to rid themselves of these patterns with training that outright bans bad behavior. This article I'm quoting is really rare. Childhood programming and how it affects adult behavior is not by any means a popular subject. Adults do not want to hear the idea that our parents can still unknowingly control us today. We don't like the idea that our parents can ruin our marriage, wreck our career success, and generally make us into somebody we don't want to be. The people I interview in the middle of their spouse's midlife crisis are convinced that all the symptoms they are witnessing are directly traceable back to the original programmers who created these instructions in those first 10 years. In these interviews, I hear so much about the narcissist. I wanted to talk about it here because the midlife crisis produces this narcissist phenomena far too often. The completely self-absorbed man or woman who has no care for children or spouse is a narcissist in brief. Let me give you a summary of how the narcissist is created in childhood and then appears in adult life by complete surprise because you didn't know anything about it in the beginning. In this example, I'm going to show you how the mother creates a narcissist. Now, I'm spending a little time on this because since there are now so many narcissists today, in fact, Amazon.com has 150 book titles on the topic of narcissism. Wow. Let me simplify it this way. When a mother creates a special status for her son with attention, special privileges, glowing praise, that boy is given a great deal of what he doesn't want. It's like getting gifts he doesn't need from his spoiling mother. This creates guilt and frustration because he has to carry the load of pretending to be happy with what appears to be a great mom. Mom creates this by doing everything she can for her son instead of the boy doing it for himself. That means he can't discover his own choices because mom does everything for him. Mom protects him. Mom intercedes. Mom provides. Mom decides. You know, many authors on this subject have already pointed out that in the majority of these situations, this mother is married to a weak and emotionally disconnected father who she also controls. Now, since this son has been denied the ability to struggle on his own in those first 10 years, He looks to validate his accomplishments, but no matter how hard he works at it, no matter how good he gets, his mom will never acknowledge that he did it without her. In adult life, he finds himself needing to achieve perfect standards that mother set for him, so he can get his mother's reward, which is mom's approval for doing things her way. During his first 10 years, mom made it clear that she would not reward her boy if he did not do what she wanted. The system she built is a son who depends on mother for approval, and mom depends on son to feel needed. To live this way as an adult man will need, well, he'll have to give up his feelings of accomplishment in order to win approval. So to solve this, the little boy becomes good at tuning into other people's feelings. It's a mother-pleasing system that's focused on getting the approval of other people. Whatever that boy was expected to do for mom to get something, that's how he will show love to you today, a love full of conditions. But without understanding any of this, you will begin to realize that he can't simply enjoy his wife. Instead, he will be forced by that machine in his brain to transform into his mother and require performance from his wife. If he does not get that performance, he will punish her just like his mother punished him. During childhood, his mother forced him into a, if you do this, you will get that system. If you do not do this, you will not get that. This brain instruction system will run this man's relationship with any woman he marries. You must understand that it isn't you, it truly is the mother at those times. He's not himself. Now, I'm not suggesting that you are married to one of these child-created narcissists, but let's say you were. Would you ever know that your husband or your wife was being controlled by something that was created in the first 10 years? That is, would you know that it had really nothing to do with you? That no matter who that person married, they would treat their spouse exactly the way their mother or father treated them? Why? Because the parent that created the narcissist is thinking only about their own needs. This child is here to make me happy. But none of this will be obvious to a family outsider. So if you are a woman who marries this man, those narcissist instructions will stay well hidden during the courtship, for sure. I'm making a big deal out of this because you who are in these marriage meltdowns with these chaos kids can take it all very personally. Things are coming out of your spouse's mouth that seem to be uniquely accusing you, uniquely your fault. You take it personally. But as I said in an interview last week to a lady named Judy, it wouldn't matter if your husband married Judy, Moody, or Cutie. No matter who he married, the machine in his brain would be treating that woman exactly as you're being treated now. And let me reinforce that to you who are listening to this, when people are taken over by that machine that was built in childhood, that person is no longer the one you married. That person is the machine created in childhood. It has a complete mind of its own, and it's on a mission. That mission is to recreate the painful childhood of your spouse in their adult life. Now, that's really hard to hear, so I'm going to say it again. That machine is on a mission to recreate the painful childhood of your spouse. So the guy or girl you married is not the machine, and the machine is not the guy or girl you married. They are separate. They are not the same. I repeat this because the world has no clue that there is something in your troubled spouse that is not your spouse. The proof I offer for those of you who are married to chaos kids, who are going through the midlife crisis meltdown, is all you have to do is look into her eyes or his eyes during that possessed condition. What you see in those eyes is not the person you married. What you see in those eyes is an entity that has been passing from generation to generation and is clearly, well, let's just say not human. If you could unplug this machine from a person, you will see that all they can do is love. When people are together, these machines are not running. They love each other. That's because that's what humans do. But a human being possessed by this thing that passes through the generations is not able to be human. They are not able to do what humans do, and that is to love. Think of it simply, and you'll realize that the two of you married for a simple reason. Both of you wanted to love and be loved. That was your whole premise. That was your whole hope. Love and be loved. But that would not be possible if either of or both of you came from Chaos Kid homes. And let me help you think about what a Chaos Kid home is, as measured by my Chaos to Purpose scale. Most parents get the food, clothing, and shelter side of raising a child, but most parents rarely get the emotional side of raising a child because they don't understand it. So let's look at the Chaos to Purpose scale this way. We'll say that 0 was the worst emotional place to grow up, while 100 was the best emotional place to grow up. Let's segment our scale into three sections. From 80 to 100, we'll call that the purpose side of the scale. That's where parents actually raise you with a purpose. That purpose is that you will grow up to be a happy, productive adult. Here, your parents are consciously teaching you, interacting with you, involving you in their conversations, asking you questions, getting you to think. These are purpose parents. They consciously realize that what they do is form your brain, and they will ultimately lead to a high quality of life for you, especially your marriage. The next section of this chaos to purpose scale goes from 80 to 50. This is what I call the twilight zone section of the scale. This is where I grew up. In the twilight zone section, you don't actually raise your children. You just make sure that they're fed, they have clothing, some toys, but mom and dad's main mission is to survive and eke out a little pleasure for themselves. They're not teaching their children at home or getting into conversations that would consciously benefit their children long term. These twilight zone parents are trying to live with their own chaos childhoods. They're trying to find relief from those same childhoods. They are doing what they have to do to survive and hoping that children don't burn the house down in the meantime. At times, these parents can get angry when children make their life difficult, but it's not going to be all that severe. In the twilight zone, your parents took you on vacations and some other trips. They gave you some photo ops, but never really talked to you or asked you questions. In other words, your mom and dad were not really thinking about you. It's in the twilight zone that parents often give a vibe that says children should be seen and not heard, figuratively speaking, sometimes literally speaking. So in the twilight zone, you won't be hearing I love yous very much, if at all. There might not be very many hugs, and one of your parents might be pretty severe at times. In my interviews, I hear a lot about twilight zone dads who came home from work, read the paper, watched TV, and went to bed. They never even had the sensitivity to know their children needed their interest, their conversation, their hugs, their validation. These fathers didn't have the slightest clue. When if you tried to convince them they were doing it wrong, they would resist your argument, become defensive, and go back to the same routine their fathers gave them in their first 10 years. And finally, there is the chaos neighborhood that goes from 50 to 0. This is a place of real childhood pain. It's here that mom and dad cannot stand each other. I have heard stories of fathers who put a gun to their wife's head in front of the children, or fathers who killed pets in front of the children, or mothers who were so emotionally unstable they would scream constantly and terrify the children with insults or physical abuse. This is the home of the chaos kid. I wouldn't wish it on anyone ever. I work with people who invited me to meet some prisoners in a medium security prison for a workshop they were doing. These men were in prison for crimes like wife abuse, writing bad checks, stealing cars, and such. So I brought up the chaos to purpose scale, and I asked the guys in the prison to each comment on where they were raised and tell a quick story about it. Every one of the 18 men in that room all confirmed themselves to be chaos kids. My point is very simple, and that is there is no mystery about this. Once you understand that the first 10 years decides everything, if you have a temper and fly off the handle at small things, it's because in those first 10 years, your programmers did the same. If you're a woman and your mother was highly organized and you didn't even notice that it was an issue, today you require organization in your home and you're not tolerant of people who mess it up. If your father cheated on your mother during your childhood, even one time, you have an instruction in the machine in your brain that allows you to attract affair partners like a magnet. You have no idea how you can find women so interested in you, but it has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with what your father did while your brain was forming. The machine in your brain is drawing them to you. As I continue to explain this phenomena to people in my interviews, I'm getting the details of the childhood stories of the person I'm talking to and the person they married. Once I have enough detail about their two childhood homes, I demonstrate how these brain machines send out a signal, scanning for potential mates. The signal is like a radio wave that is searching for a matching frequency, a frequency that will best recreate the childhood home you had. Your potential spouse has a machine in his or her brain that is going through the same process. When the two machines find a match, they release endorphins, oxytocin, dopamine into your brains, and you feel suddenly like you are in love. It turns out you don't choose your mate all by yourself, as we are led to believe. The machines choose your mate for you. This is why we use the words fall in love. You do not choose love. You fall. Why do you fall? Because something is doing the pushing. And most amazingly, the person you're attracted to will most closely and accurately be a key character in the reproduction of your child at home. How many times have you heard people saying things like, he married his mother, she married her father? That's a simplistic observation. But when you get into the details of these childhoods the way I do, it jumps out at you how determined these brain machines are to find the person who will most perfectly recreate your childhood home. This is not obvious. If you're going to start seeing it, you really have to start looking. I call it your invisible lifestyle. Look up lifestyle in the dictionary and it reads, a way of life or style of living reflects the values of a person or group. In other words, it's the lifestyle values of your mom and dad. And if you didn't have a mom and dad, it's the values of your most influential programmer, grandma, aunt, orphanage. I also want you to know about something I ran into often in these interviews of people's childhoods. It's the phrase, I don't remember my childhood. Before you're shocked by the phrase, let me tell you who's saying it. It's always chaos kids. I've never heard purpose kids raised by purpose parents ever say the phrase, I can't remember my childhood, never. Instead, these purpose kids say phrases like, I've got so many happy memories, but not so for chaos kids. They struggle to find a happy memory. And the ones who say, I don't remember my childhood are really saying it was so painful, it's been blocked out, so they don't have to consciously deal with it. When I hear I don't remember my childhood, I call this the black box childhood. The memories are there, but they're hidden in a black box. We don't know what happened back then. But one thing for sure, it wasn't good. The next situation that doesn't happen often, but I call it the white picket fence childhood. This is about the parents who made sure the family never looked bad under any circumstance. The focus of these parents was to make sure that the world thought we were wonderful. Unfortunately, when those parents weren't wonderful in secret, their children's lives reflected it like the most accurate mirror. These parents tried to keep a beautiful white picket fence house that the world would see, but their own childhood pain came out on their children. Even though suppressed, it all appeared in their childhood adult lives. They were forced to recreate what was created behind closed doors. So I want to repeat this because there is so much emotion in the subject, but I'm not talking this way to establish blame on anyone, as I said before. Humans are victims of this evil that runs through certain families like a river. It's no one's fault that we're all so ignorant and cannot wake up to the truth in time. We cannot blame our parents or grandparents. What's the use of working to establish blame? After you do the work of placing blame, you get a little feeling of satisfaction, and then you're left feeling just empty. You gain nothing. Blame is the last thing we want to dwell on. What we want to work on is separating the person from the monster within. If you want to put energy into something, that's where I put the energy. I like to say this way. Separate, separate, separate. You must start seeing your spouse as a good person who is a carrier of something that is destructive. It's like looking at a human being that has a disease they're carrying. You would never accuse them of having a disease that doctors don't understand. You would be compassionate for them because you would separate the person from the disease. That's what I'm suggesting you do here. The machine in your chaos kid's brain was not put there by his own or her own choice. So since we don't care about blame, let's talk about the 5 rules of the chaos kid. I will list the rules as if we were talking about a husband who's listening to understand his wife. So I created these 5 rules of a chaos kid because I was trying to find a way to help the staying spouse realize that the person he or she married was not doing this by choice. There was something in him or her that was doing it. These 5 rules are really talking about the thing that possesses your mate. Rule 1, she says what she doesn't mean, what she means she doesn't say. Rule 2, her needs are more important than your needs. Rule 3, she sells herself as someone she's not. Rule 4, any good thing you do or say is treated as a threat. Rule 5, she wants what she cannot have, what she has, she doesn't want. I'm using she here, but you can just as easily insert he. So in my Environment Changer program, I tell people who are considering this program that when you get into the program, you will hear men or women talking about their spouses, and you will think they are married to your spouse. Why can I say that? The reason is that this entity, this machine that passes through generations, is the same no matter who it's in. In other words, when your spouse enters the midlife crisis, they are really being possessed by the same thing that possesses previous generations. When you hear the five rules of a chaos kid, you clearly see that your spouse has become those rules, is living by them. Yet when you look at your mate's past, you most likely will see none of this behavior. Imagine you're a woman, and I'm a friend of yours, and you're available. I come up to you all excited because there's a guy I want you to meet. I say this to you. You're really going to love this guy. He says what he doesn't mean, what he means he doesn't say. His needs are more important than your needs. He sells himself as somebody he's not. In fact, any good thing you do or say, he treats as a threat. And he wants what he can't have, and what he has, he doesn't want. Well, you would never touch a guy like this with a 10-foot pole. And I say that because when you met your husband or your wife, there was something that drew you to him or her that had nothing to do with these five chaos kid rules. What that proves is that the person you love has been kidnapped. They are powerless to save themselves. In the realm of behavior, doing and saying things, you have tried everything and nothing has worked. You've apologized, made accusations, you defend yourself, you tried to get the intimate details of his situation, you pressured him, you lost your cool, you dragged family and friends into it trying to make your case, but no matter what you did, it made everything worse. I hope you're done with all that. Here's what you have to admit, though. At some point in your past years together, you lost your guy or girl's heart. Once you lose the heart, the marriage is over. You don't need a divorce to announce it. Unfortunately, you can't really see when you lose his or her heart. It's not clear to you. But that's what happened. Now let me ask this. What's more important? That you lost his or her heart some years ago, or that you're now facing a public divorce, the end of the legal arrangement between you and your spouse in the state? Which is more important? Losing his or her heart, or the end of the legal marriage? When I put it this way, everyone realizes the legal relationship is nothing at all compared to the loss of the heart. The mission is now to win the heart of your chaos kid back. But you're not equipped to do the job. You are definitely not in Kansas anymore, to quote the Wizard of Oz. Kansas represents your normal life without the chaos being released into your spouse's life and yours. Kansas is where you think your spouse will always be with you, no matter what you do or don't do. Kansas is where you have expectations and you can lose your temper and do whatever you want without long-term consequences. But you're not in Kansas anymore. Where you are now is planet chaos. All the rules are different, and you must learn what these rules are. But learning the rules is not enough. That's because you are being taken on an emotional ride that is very hard on you. And that ride begins when massive amounts of tension are being dumped on you every day, whether you see your spouse or not. If you have children, that tension is dumping onto them, and it's very hard for them to understand what's happening. That's why everyone's struggling. The machine is spreading its damage to everyone in the family, and you don't know what to do. I want to read you an email I received a few weeks ago from a woman about her chaos kid husband. This email so perfectly sums up the spouse married to the chaos kid and what they're facing. It sums up what they must live through. If you stayed with me this far, I think you're going to relate to this. Quote, "How can I meet my husband's need when he's no longer in our home? We've been married 22 years and he said he loves me, but he didn't love me anymore. He suddenly said he wanted to be friends, but he's not acting like a friend. When he left the first time, he didn't even tell the kids or me where he went. He moved into an apartment. He's going to bars during the day and staying there till 2 a.m. He doesn't care about anything. He will not communicate with me or the kids. When I ask what he's doing, he lies and gives me vague answers. I asked him if he'd go out with me for coffee and talk, but he comes with reasons not to do it. How am I supposed to try and meet his needs if he won't be the friend he says he wants to be? He won't even let me know where he is. I love my husband and I'm willing to do everything to save our relationship, but I don't know the right thing to do. I feel if I don't keep up some form of contact, he will forget about me and the kids because that's the way he's acting. He's actually behaving like we never even existed." You can hear it in the tone that she is so fearful, so frustrated, so overwhelmed. She wants all the pain just to go away. She has no clue where to start. She landed in Oz and she can't find the yellow brick road. Every day I work with people, in my course who are in this very place. Not everybody's ready for my environment change, of course, focus on how to win the heart again. As I said when I began this talk, that my purpose was to help you realize what happened to you and why it happened, and I believe I've accomplished that. You might be saying to yourself, what's next? Well, I would suggest that you focus on one word, because under the conditions you're facing, one word is about all you can remember. The word is calm, C-A-L-M. I want you to say the word calm, write the word calm, imagine a calm scene in your imagination. Stay focused on the word calm and don't focus on chaos coming from your troubled spouse. That chaos is a force that will drag you in and tear you down. Take little post-it notes and write the word on each one, calm, calm. No, it's not the whole answer, but it can get you through some tough spots. If what I'm saying makes sense, and you want to hear more about what you can do to first secure yourself emotionally and then ultimately to save the person you love, you may have unanswered questions. I have a course about how to survive a midlife crisis that covers everything you need to know, like common mistakes to avoid, what to expect when will your spouse come out of the midlife crisis, how affairs fit into all this, how to deal with an affair, how to weather the storm, separate your spouse from the monster. I have a version of this course for women married to chaos men, and a version for men married to chaos women. The course is called How to Survive the Midlife Crisis, Unraveling the Chaos. Again, there's one version for men and one version for women. If this sounds like something that would help you right now, you can get more details by going to surviveamidlifecrisis.com. Surviveamidlifecrisis.com. Since you've stayed with me to this point, I know you're interested in marriage, and at this point, I'd like to offer you a 10% discount off the full $97 course price if you enter the promotion code CHAOS during checkout. So that CHAOS will give you a 10% discount when you enter it into the promo code. The course covers more detail that I did not have time to cover here. I created it so that you have a plan and a focus to follow while your husband or wife goes through this chaotic time in your lives. If you don't have a focus and a plan, it's going to be long and painful for you and your kids. But when you have answers, you know what to expect, how to deal with it, this helps make your tension, anxiety significantly less. And when your spouse suddenly transforms into someone you no longer recognize, you need all the emotional security and stability you can get. The materials in the course are delivered as a downloadable MP3, recordings and PDF documents that you can read, along with important documents that will help you stay focused day after day and doing the right things and staying away from the wrong things. All the materials are downloadable instantly, nothing shipped to you. If this sounds like something that can help you, again, the web address is surviveamidlifecrisis.com. Remember to enter the promotion code CHAOS, C-H-A-O-S, all one word, to receive that 10% discount. Regardless of what you do, I hope this teleclass helped you get some grounding and perhaps shut off the little voice inside your head that's telling you it's all your fault. It's not your fault, but it's now your responsibility if you're going to weather this storm. It won't last forever. They come out of it. I hope I've given you a much clearer picture of what a midlife crisis is and what you can do now. Thank you for joining me in this teleclass. It was great to be with you. I'm thankful to Global Teleclass for this opportunity to share my message. I'm Larry Bellotto.